All right. Movie retrospective time.
Yeah, this is a good one, too. Cat's Eye.
Now, this is one we've mentioned this before. I think we probably mentioned it on the Creep Show, episode that we did. And I think because I mentioned it, our friend Rob, who sends us lots and lots of movies, sent me the Blu-ray for this. So I was really, really excited about it because I hadn't seen this movie. I saw it a million times, like back on cable in the
day. And I had never seen it.
And Tom had never seen it.
No. I was surprised. It's kind of like going back in time. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It was kind of like an anthology, and it was like along the lines of what you would get back in the 80s of like the Steven Spielberg era. It kind of felt almost kind of like a Spielberg horror type movie.
It did, because it was more like, now I should say that, is this as good as, say, Creepshow? No. Uh-huh. I mean, but how many horror anthologies are as good as Creepshow? Not that many, frankly. But that, you know, that came out in 82. This came out 3 years later. Now, Creepshow was kind of more focused on, like, the kind of over-the-top gore and stuff like that. Whereas this one was rated PG-13, which in 1985 was a new rating. I think it came into, like, being because of Gremlins, right?
Yeah, PG-13 back then would have been an R today.
Yeah, it probably would have been.
Yeah, a lot of the shit that people would see today in a PG-13 movie back in those days, they'd be like, "That they allowed that?" Like, yeah. Back then, they did. You know, smoking, drug references. I think they even allowed certain amounts of nudity in PG-13.
Because I think I've seen some PG-13 movies from back then that at least had like tits in it.
Yeah, and so you know, it was cool. We liked it.
Well, yeah, you didn't have a lot of choice back then. But yeah, so this one came out in 1985, and it's actually three stories. Now, the first two stories were adaptations of two of Stephen King's stories that was in the anthology Night Shift. So it'll be Quitter's Ink and The Ledge. And then the third story, which is called General, was one that he wrote specifically for the movie. Now, the thing about it is that the cat, there's not really a wraparound in the sense that Creepshow has the wraparound with the voodoo doll.
They tried.
Yeah, well, here's something that I found out when I was like researching the movie was that initially they did, film a prologue that was like, that kind of explained, the relationship between the cat and Drew Barrymore's character from the third story, whose name is Amanda, and why the cat was like traveling to find her and like there was like a psychic link between them or something like that. But I do feel like since that's kind of established over the course of the movie, I don't think you really needed that. You know what I mean? I think it might have like bogged the movie down a little bit because it wasn't really, you figured it out like as it went on. That here's the cat, you know, this girl is like psychically talking to her, to the cat, and the cat's trying to get to her to save her from some calamity or whatever. And that's kind of what ties the three stories together. Other than that, the stories don't really have anything to do with one another, but that's, you know, that's totally fine. So this was actually, all of it was written by Stephen King. It was directed by Lewis Teague, who also directed Cujo and The Jewel of the Nile.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to mention too, because I think when we were watching it, you were talking about how strange that score was.
Yeah.
It's very 80s cheesy.
Yeah.
You know who did that? Alan Silvestri. He also did Back to the Future Predator Forrest Gump. As a matter of fact,
it had kind of a weird 80s vaporwave type of cheesy, sound like a cheesy Casio.
It did, yeah.
But, you know, it fit for the time.
Yeah.
It, for the tone of the movie, I guess, you know. It's
yeah.
This is a good movie. You know, I would say it's way above your average Stephen King movie. Your average Stephen King movie was pretty fucking crappy. This one is up there with, like, you know, Christine in terms of quality.
Yeah. And I think I watched them both right around the same time.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's pretty good.
Maybe this one, like, you know, but I think
I like Christine. That's a good movie.
I do as well. And I feel like that doesn't get a lot of love when you're talking about Stephen King adaptations.
It's aged very well.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think we did review it on this channel.
It didn't look that good on VHS, but it looks really good on Blu-ray on a new smart TV.
Well, everything looks
so much better. But I think televisions, CRT television and VHS, I think that actually tarnished a lot of movies' reputations over the years.
True.
During the video rental age.
Yeah.
Because during that time, you know, some of that shit didn't transfer real well. and it would come across as, oh, that's old, low budget, cheap ass movie, because it didn't look that good.
Yeah, because it looked like crap on the format.
It looked like shit. But in the theater, had you seen it in the theater, it looked great.
Yeah.
Well, now you can see the way they used to look in the theater. And this movie looks good, man. It's got good special effects, especially for the time. Good acting.
Yeah, this really has kind of like an all-star cast. Another thing I wanted to note, too, and I didn't know this either, but apparently when the movie was first being made, it was produced by Dino De Laurentiis. Now, before this was made, the three stories were actually supposed to be, Quitters Inc. was always supposed to be the first one, and then General, the one about the cat, was the cat and the troll, was always going to be the third one. However, the middle one, they weren't going to do The Ledge. They were actually going to do another Stephen King story, Sometimes They Come Back, if you guys remember that one, about the guy going back to the town, like the bullies that killed his brother and shit like that. But I think that they decided, the producer, Dino De Laurentiis, was like, well, one, Sometimes They Come Back is a much darker story than the three that turned up in the movie, so he didn't think it would fit in with the tone. And also, he thought that Sometimes They Come Back would make a better, like, feature-length movie. So he did actually make a made-for-TV adaptation of it in 1991, which I saw a long time ago, and I remember being not that bad. Because that's actually like a really good short story. I think it even did well enough that it had like at least one sequel, maybe two.
But I'm so kind of disappointed about what happened with Dino Pictures. De Laurentiis films were fucking good, but they lost a lot of money.
Yeah,
making bombs. They didn't look that good on VHS. It didn't. They didn't transfer real well, and I don't. But they looked great in the theater. I remember seeing them a lot of them in the theater and fucking loved them, man.
Yeah.
Like Flash Gordon. People made fun of the Flash Gordon movie. It didn't look that good on TV. But in the theater, it looked fucking great.
Yeah.
And they got it on Blu-ray now. You look at it, you just, man, it was a fucking mind-blowing movie. And it's a comic book movie. Well, it's the same with Dune. You know what I mean? Dune looked great in the theater, and it looks good on Blu-ray. Pretty good. And, this actually has a cast member from Dune. The guy who plays that gangster in the last story, or the second to last story.
Yeah.
He's played...
That's right.
Baron Harkonnen.
Baron Harkonnen, yeah. So he was in a shit ton of movies.
Though. Yeah, and I think Dino De Laurentiis used... I think they used a lot of same actors.
Well, you know, you can see why they get in the habit of doing that. Yeah. Because, you know, they know they're a known quantity, and yeah, it's like, you know, they're going to turn up and do a good job and shit like that.
Didn't Dino De Laurentiis also do Conan?
Did he produce it? He might have, yeah.
It was John Millis directing, but I think that was Dino. That was a hit, though. That movie was a fucking hit.
Yeah, I mean, he had enough hits that people still like remember his name, but he's kind of known for funding some movies that were like big budget failures.
Well, they fucked up Conan too. Yeah. They dumbed that one down and made it PG for kids. And it was Dino. Dino did that. Dino was known for spending a lot of money on costumes and sets.
Yeah.
But as they started to kind of lose out, he started getting cheap, you know. And that's what happened with Conan, too.
Yeah. But I mean, this movie...
this movie looked good.
I have to say, and particularly the special effects in the third segment are like really, really good. But as you said, this has a much more... like playful tone, I guess. Creepshow was kind of playful, but it was much more like focused on gore and like much more horrific monster type of elements. Whereas this one is kind of more lighthearted, but then you have like some aspects, particularly in the middle part, like the ledge and stuff like that, where, you know, there's gangsters and beheading and things of that nature. But overall, it's kind of like a PG-13 movie of its era. Yeah. Much like Gremlins, which was like a fun movie, but then had some really fucked up shit in it.
Tonally, I thought it was kind of similar to Poltergeist 1.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. Because there's like a lot of humor in it, and a lot of kind of like kid... I don't want to say kid-friendly, but like a kid could watch it without being traumatized. But then there's like some kind of more adult, like darker themes
Kind of brought me back to, you know, 80s suburbia. You know, that feeling that you had to be
there, like a Spielbergian.
What am I saying? American is fucking apple pie type, you know, Chevy and, you know, kind of, you know, all American kind of feel to it that Spielberg had.
Yeah.
You know, back in those days. It was kind of a mainstream mall culture feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And there
but I liked it.
There were a lot of movies that have this type of tone that came out around this time period. Because like I said, this was 85. Yeah. Now, the first... it's interesting seeing it again after so many... Because I saw it like a million times when I was growing up. And I think over the years, like, my favorite ones have kind of shifted back and forth. And now seeing it again, you know, I remember things about... you know, certain ones that I like better than the other ones. And now I see it again and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I like this one better now. I don't really know. I think probably The Ledge is my favorite. For a while, it was Quitter's Ink just because I remember reading that story and I liked this adaptation of it. But now I think I like The Ledge slightly better. But yeah, so Quitter's Ink is based on, like I said, Stephen King's short story from Night Shift, which is basically about a stop smoking clinic that really wants you to stop smoking. And they're like using like some fucking mob tactics and shit. Where it's James Woods is in it. And he basically is like, he goes to this place because he wants to quit smoking. And he thinks they're joking at first. But apparently their whole thing is, well, we're going to be watching you all the time. And if we catch you smoking, then there's like this ramping up of horrible shit that would happen. Not to him. They do it to his family. They'll do it like to his wife or his daughter or whatever. And like I said, at first he doesn't believe it. It's like, oh, they can't be watching me all the time and shit. But as it goes on, you find out that they are very serious about this shit and everything. So for a long time, this one was my favorite. I like, and this is what I'm saying too, about like the tone being kind of playful, because this one in particular, you know, James Woods is very kind of, because he's quitting smoking and he's like really cranky. And so he has like all these funny kind of like sarcastic lines and shit. And, you know, just him trying to like sneak around and get a cigarette without getting caught and all this other kind of shit. And plus he has that really weird, like surrealist kind of dream or whatever it is that he has, where he's like at that party and that cover of Every Breath You Take is playing. And like the guy from Quitter's Ink is like there with his fucking silver jumpsuit. And everybody's like, what? Like people are like dressed up as cigarettes or cigarette boxes and blowing smoke in people's face and shit like that. So it has kind of like this fun, like surreal type of thing. But then it has like some kind of really fucked up like undercurrent. You know what I mean? So there was that one. And then the second one, like I said, watching it again, I definitely think the second one is the best, is the best one done. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just kind of like, because the concept of it is like really, really simple. You know, Robert Hayes, I think is the name of that actor. He was in Airplane. And he is, messing around. It's, you know, what's weird. It's like the kind of narrative or the outline of this story is almost the same as that one from Creepshow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where Leslie Nielsen like buries fucking Ted Danson in, on the beach or whatever. This is a very similar setup where, you know, Robert Hayes, he plays like a tennis pro who's like fucking around with the wife of a gangster in Las Vegas. The husband the gangster finds out about it and makes a bet with this guy that he's like, well, I'll give you my wife and a whole shit ton of money if you walk around the ledge of my skyscraper, like up in his fucking penthouse apartment, like without falling off. And because I'm terrified of heights, this one really, really scares me, because pretty much the whole bulk of it is like him just like walking around and you like hoping that his ass doesn't fall off. And there's like just a little shit, like a little pigeon that comes and pecks him and shit like that. And it's like really, really scary. And so I like that because it's like, you know, it's just kind of like a simple story. There's not like a lot of complicating issues. It's just like a very primal kind of like survivalist type of thing. And like I said, if you're afraid of heights like I am, it's like really stressful. And the special effects in this are actually quite good. It looks like they probably did it with rotoscoping or green screening or whatever it was that they used, but it actually looks pretty damn good for like 1985, I have to say.
Yeah, I thought the special effects looked good.
Yeah.
They were above average for the time.
Way above average. Oh, definitely.
Like I said, it was almost kind of like a Spielberg flick.
Yeah. And then the third one, where I think the special effects are the best, the one general about the cat that comes, I mean, the cat finally comes and finds this little girl who's in danger.
The little gremlin troll.
Yeah, he's like a little troll and he lives in her wall. And I like the way that Stephen King kind of subverted, because there is actually an old wives' tale about that cats would like jump on your chest at night and like
suck your breath out.
But I like that they subverted it in this, where it's like it wasn't the cat doing that. It was like this little like fairy tale troll that came out of your wall, and the cat was actually trying to save the little girl from the troll. But of course, her parents didn't believe her and was like thought the cat was, you know, killing the bird and doing all this other kind of shit in the house when the troll was doing it. And the troll in this looks amazing. I mean, just the animatronics of the face, like it has this really expressive little face. And what they did, instead of using, they did use a little bit of rotoscoping, I think it's called. They did use a little bit of that, like when, you know, when the troll had to come up on Drew Barrymore's chest and stuff. But for the parts where he was just like running around the room, they put a little person in the suit and then they built an enormous set. Yeah. So it looked like he was a little bitty troll and he was, and it looks fantastic. Yeah. Like you would never fucking know that that was just like a giant set, like a giant bed and giant books and everything like that.
Yeah. It looks like they did some mat work too. And
yeah, they had to at some points because, you know, there are points where the little troll like came up on the bed and
he
like
grabbed her nose though, man. It looked real.
It did. It's like, it really looked amazing. Yeah. I'm not really entirely sure how they did that.
Right.
I mean, they might have had him squeezing something and then she was like
added to it
later. It didn't look like, because a lot of times in the 80s, even in like high budget movies, and this one only cost $7 million, even in high budget movies, you could still kind of see the line around like, you know, where it was cut off, like where the green screen was or whatever.
Might have been just some kind of forced perspective.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how they did it.
I don't know.
Now that you're thinking about it, because yes, he comes and like squeezes her nose, so she breathes out her mouth, so he can like.
And it looked like he grabbed it.
Yeah, it was like it was really amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
it might have been a little puppet.
And the cat that they used, well, actually, I think it was more than one cat. I think it was like 12 to 14 different cats they used for this. But the cat actors in it were actually really good, getting the little cat to chase the thing. I guess they just used treats and shit for them to do that. There were like a couple, like I said, this was a, not a huge, box office success, but since it only cost $7 million, it made about double its budget back. So it was seen as kind of like a modest success. Also, I have to mention too, that this had a whole shit ton of Easter eggs, as they didn't call them that back then, but that's what they call them now. Referring to other Stephen King stories. It starts pretty much right out the gate, like when you're watching the fucking credits, and then the little kitties run around, and Cujo starts chasing the kitty, and then he almost gets run over by Christine, and then there's like shit later on, like one of the characters is like reading Pet Sematary. There's like a TV on it, someone that has like the Dead Zone, the David Cronenberg movie, is on in the background and shit. So there's all that kind of like fun. There might be more than that, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, like more references. But it's kind of like a fun thing if you're into Stephen King and you can like spot all the little hints and clues they put in there, like for some of his other stories and stuff. But I feel like this, because it didn't reach the heights of Creepshow, because I mean, like Creepshow is one of the best horror anthologies, easily top five horror anthologies ever made. And this only came out like a, you know, 2 or 3 years later. And it's good, but since it wasn't quite as good as Creepshow, I think it gets kind of overlooked a bit. And because it's not quite as horrific, it's kind of just kind of more like a fun.
It just kind of got forgotten and, you know, it got kind of pushed to the back. But it did kind of live on in video rental.
True, like,
You'd see it at Blockbuster all the time.
And they played it on cable all the time, which is, I think that's where I first ended up seeing it. I probably saw Creepshow first, but I did end up seeing, because I really, really like anthology movies. And, you know, anything that was Stephen King, you know, I was going to, like, fucking watch it.
It would be like, it would be at like Blockbusters, but, you know, it wouldn't be with, like, the big names.
Yeah.
It was always, like, more towards the bottom shelves.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird where they put it. I guess because during that time, a lot of Stephen King movies kind of got a bad reputation. People weren't renting them as much. They weren't as sought out.
Which is, it's kind of a shame because,
they were hit and miss. You know,
because look at, like, Creepshow was amazing. Dead Zone was amazing. Yeah. Carrie was amazing. The Shining was amazing.
Yeah.
But then there were some kind of, like,
Langoliers, and then, like,
well, that was later. That was 90s.
Lawnmower Man.
He sued and had his name taken off that. Terrible, and I don't fucking blame him because I saw that movie And I knew at that point, like I heard about the controversy, I'm like, oh, I gotta see this
shit. Maximum Overdrive is crap. I don't remember.
Although that one's actually kind of fun if you're like drunk.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Because it's just so big and stupid.
Yeah, I remember it being so, like you said, so fucking dumb that
it's like watching watching wrestling.
Yeah.
You have to be in the mood for it. But if you're in the mood for it, it's fun. You know what I mean? Because it knows it's dumb.
And then some of the television series didn't age that well. I mean, I tried to watch The Stand again, and I couldn't really get through the first episode. It was pretty bad.
I couldn't either.
Bad.
Which is a shame.
It didn't seem to be that bad at the time. But yeah. It's pretty bad.
Salem's Lot, I think.
Salem's Lot, excellent.
Ended up good. Excellent. Like, you know, that's pretty much the best. And there were some later ones that they made for TV, which were good, like Rose Red. That one was really good. That was probably 2000s.
I liked the television version of The Shining. A lot of people didn't like it.
I liked it.
I liked it.
Not one.
It was verbatim from the book.
Well, yeah, because Stephen King was like, well,
yeah,
Kubrick changed it too much and stuff, and he's like, I'm going to make it just like the book, and I'm like, there's a reason why you make it not just like the book.
Yeah, it doesn't translate to the screen very well.
Not really, no.
But it did remind me of everything that happened in pretty much everything that happened in the book.
Yeah. I think after we watched it, because we sat and watched it one night, and it's like 6 hours long or something. And I think probably the next day or a week later, I said, I'm going to reread the novel again and just see. It's like, it was like almost identical. Yeah. He even like took big chunks of dialogue and shit like that.
Yeah.
I have to say though, that the actors that they got for that wasn't who I was picturing when I was reading the book, I guess.
You could redo that movie today, redo that entire series and make a Netflix series out of it. It'd probably be pretty good.
Although
you could redo it.
I kind of feel like I wish, because they've already done it twice, and I feel like you're never going to top Kubrick's version, so like why bother trying? But I feel like Stephen King has so many other properties that would make good movies. I mean, he has written 50 bajillion things.
Evidently, Dr. Sleep bombed, and I liked Dr. Sleep.
I liked it as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really good movie. Yeah. But, I mean, horror movies are, particularly ones like that, are always going to be divisive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is kind of a shame. And I can see how, it suffers in comparison with the original Shining, blah, blah, blah. But I liked what they did with it. I liked, the direction they went. And I've liked a lot of the adaptations that they made for Netflix. You know what I mean? Like they did fucking Gerald's Game and...
Yeah, I remember that one.
Even In the Tall Grass was okay, although I would have liked it to end differently.
And we forgot about It.
Yeah.
The It movies were pretty good.
The first one was a lot better than the second one, but the second one was decent.
The second one was what happened in the book, though, from what I remember.
Yeah, it is. It stuck fairly closely. And they made it. There was another one on Netflix, too. Was it? What the fuck was it? It was the one with the guy and like the... Well, and god damn it, I can't remember. It was like a year, like 1963.
Gunslinger fucking sucked ass. Remember how bad Gunslinger was?
It wasn't even, what was it? It wasn't even called Gunslinger, was it? It was called
the Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower.
God,
well, like
terrible.
I said, and we've probably talked about this before, but I was kind of like, why did they think that they could just take that and like make it one standalone movie?
It never worked.
That didn't even really,
it
was only kind of like tangentially related to the books. I haven't read all the books.
The
I only read
was
the first
great.
Couple.
The Fog was great. Not The Fog. What was
the
it
Mist.
Called? The Mist. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mist was great.
That was Frank Darabont.
I heard they might be thinking about making a series about The Mist. Or making
You could do that. Because it was set around a whole town, so you could kind of go into the backstories of all the characters and shit like that. Well, no, wait. We saw it.
Did we see it? Yeah.
It was one season or two seasons. It was all right.
Yeah.
I think the first season was good, and then the second season went off the rails. And
yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that's right. We were looking at that, weren't we?
Yeah, we did watch it. I can't remember where we saw it.
Okay.
But, yeah. But so, if you're into Stephen King, and you especially like his 80s stuff, and like I said, they made, like, a lot of decent... I mean, yeah, they made a lot of shitty Stephen King adaptations, but they made a lot of decent ones in the 80s, too. Like I said, they made Christine, they made Dead Zone. And this is definitely a worthy movie, and I do feel like it gets forgotten about.
Right.
Maybe because it's an anthology, and people are like, "Oh, Creepshow is kind of the definitive, Stephen King / George Romero type of thing." But this is like a different thing; it's its own thing. And if you dig like Stephen King's old, old stories, and you want to see him adapted, and want to see kind of little Drew Barrymore playing a whole bunch of characters and stuff about a hero kitty, which, you know, I always like that, then definitely go check it out, because I feel like it's a little bit underrated and underseen these days. So, yeah, check it out.